Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. This is Richard Benulli. Today we have Ira Harris. Ira is an independent floor trader, successful hedge fund manager, global macro consultant trading foreign currencies, bonds, commodities, and equities for over 40 years. Also, he was a CME director from 1997 to 2003. Welcome, Ira.
Richard, well, thanks for being patient with me so and having me back again.
Great. And so I thought we'd begin today with a discussion of your interview with Rick Santelli back in February of 2016. At that time, you mentioned the gold and bonds were better plays than the Chinese yuan. And since then, I think you referenced gold as being 18% higher and also referencing a shift in asset classes taking place. So that would be great to get your insight on that.
Yeah, you know, and this is always a cautious zone for me to do this. But with, you know, sometimes you just have to go back and look at things that you've said to weed out all the noise that crowds the world of finance and the discussion that takes place. So yes, on February 1st, 2016, I had done a hit, which is available on by Googling, you can find it, with Rick Santelli. And it was the Monday after a weekend. I mean, it was a scheduled interview. And what took place over that weekend is that, what I call the four horsemen of the global macro world, people I, by the way, I hold in very high regard for their analytical ability, David Tepper, Einhorn, Kyle Bass, and George Soros. These guys came out and made comments over that weekend. It got a lot of media play, that they expected a 30% depreciation in the Chinese yuan because of all the things, the debt issues in China and things that were taking place. And that on that Monday morning with Santelli, I discussed that that's a difficult trade for a lot of people to make. And that, you know, that if you thought that was going to take place, if you thought, again, the emphasis on if you thought, and all the ramifications that would come with it, that I would rather be long bonds, all kinds of bonds, all over the world, sovereign debt, but not corporate, and gold. And it raised Rick's eyebrows. He said, why? I said, well, because if the Chinese yuan, and at that time it was trading, I'm looking at it right now on my machine, was trading about 6.58. Which was okay level. It was, you know, had certainly weakened over a period of time from where it was down at 6.1. So I said, if you're looking for a 30% depreciation from these levels, the impact on the global, on the globe will be massive deflation. Because if the Chinese were depreciating that much, that means that they'd be shoving exports out as fast as they could. And it would be, and it would really put downward pressure on prices all over the world. And we already know we had too much slack in the global economy, and that would be the impact. And I would own the gold because it's deflation that will force the hand of central banks to panic. We are now at zero to negative interest rates, and the central banks, you know, people say they fear inflation. No, they don't. Not at this point in time. We go back to Ben Bernanke talking about the lessons of 1937, and that's the fear of deflation. Central banks fear what happened in Japan for the last 20 years. The fear of deflation weighs upon them. So then, from a hard money perspective, it's more the issue of what you do in response to that deflation. And that's why I said gold would be a better play and a safer play and an easier play for most investors and traders to make. And so I went back the other day because we had to review it, and the yuan had actually dropped it right now, it is through the level of where it was that weekend. As it's right now, it's just trading as we're speaking at 6.48. So that's moved where the yuan is actually higher from that date. But gold is up now 18 or 19% from them, and the bonds are basically steady. They had maybe they're now 10 basis points higher than they were. But that was just the purpose of that trade, because it's to put the light on that central banks fear deflation far more than they fear inflation at this point in time. Now, will that change? Well, the Fed hope it changed, but it's not changing. And we heard Mario Draghi this morning; he's much more worried about hitting his inflation targets on the upside than anything else. So. That was my point of that. So I just wanted to go and revisit that for people who follow my blog and, you know, just to put perspective to things.
Great. And what about your current thoughts on the 210 yield curve? Like maybe we look at the U.S. first. Where is it at now? I think you had some concerns that it might be breaching the 73 basis points level.
Yeah, we're down here again, and I know that when things keep pushing at a certain level, this 73 basis point level has been an important level for me. I've written about it for 4 years, and we've bounced out of this area several times, but here we are back visiting it, so we're getting some flattening in the curve. Now, you know, as I warned last night in my blog, this is a critical level for me, and it sends a very important message to the banks, because this curve ought not to be flattening, especially if the Fed embarks upon, our beloved Peter Buchvar calls, quantitative tightening, which is a wonderful phrase. But if they, you know, which is intends shrinking their balance sheet, that should unleash more supply on the long end upon the market, and the curve ought to steepen. But if the curve chooses not to, I think the Fed will have received a message that all their talk of tightening, we saw the Bank of Canada, of course, tighten yesterday, and we saw the response to the currency, which rallied quite a bit because it caught the market off guard because they weren't expecting a tight consensus, wasn't expecting a tightening.
Yeah.
So we saw that action, and this will back the Fed off, and this plays right into Leo Brainard's speech back in June, and what Leo Brainard said again in recently, that she doesn't want the Fed funds rate to go up, that the Fed funds rate now is high enough to embark upon quantitative tightening. And if more supply, I know it's going to be a trickle effect to begin with, as Janet Yellen, you know, has famously said that quantitative tightening will be like watching paint dry. You know, Peter's not sure that Peter Buchvar doesn't believe that, nor do I once it starts going. But this curve is very interesting. Now, as I warn, and I'm not being a two-fisted economist here, on the other hand, but with the impact from the Bank of Japan and from the ECB still actively involved in quantitative easing programs, and because we believe that in the global macro world that money is fungible, it may just keep pushing the impact on lower. It might push the long end of the U.S. curve lower and lower. And this is really going to cause a problem for the Fed. They're going to have to sit up here and take note of it, because they cannot afford in all their designs for whatever they want to do for this curve to start flattening more dramatically here.
And that's what you think would likely happen, right? If the 210 breaches 73 basis points, then
yes, especially if it closes on a weekly basis, because you know, yes, in today's algo-driven world, we can get all kinds of erratic movements. But if it closed on a more long-term technical level, like a weekly close, that would be that would give me a flashing sign. Now, let me tell you what, my history of studying this has been that when you get flattening curves, especially in the United States dollar, which is, of course, the most significant part because they're the world's reserve currency, that your currency ought, and I emphasize ought, first of all, to rally. Now, that may seem counterintuitive, but that's what does happen. I don't know what the time lag is, but the currency does rally. And it's not good for metals, because what does it reflect? It reflects a coming slowdown in the global economies. That's what flattening yield curves project. That's historically right. And that's why they are such, or have been, you know, historically such great predictors of economic of economic and financial outcomes. But in this world of massive QE, we don't know that. Again, as we've stressed, and I've been on with you now, I think, for 3 years on and off, the signaling mechanism has been so badly broken. And this may be one of those times, but it certainly sends a warning sign. And the warning sign this time is, and this will be interesting, because if I'm right, this time the dollar will not rally and the gold will not break. It may have an initial, but it won't, there won't be any significant damage done to these price levels, because the Fed will be in a very difficult situation as to how to respond to this, because, you know, with interest rates at 1.25%, it's not like they have all that much latitude on that end. So this gets very interesting. We are at very interesting pivotal points, and we're going to wait to see the way this unfolds. But the market dynamics are telling us that we're at very precarious points.
Yeah, and we also talked yesterday on the program show in terms of the what's happening by China on the Silk Road and the sort of rally in base metals over the last 1 year or so, 1 year period. So that, I mean, in the old world, I guess that that could base metals, precious metals, you're saying, could fall. But now, you know, because of all the distortions and new factors such as China's development, could we could still see that trend of rising base metals and precious metals?
Well, yeah. I mean, we're still trying to figure this out as we've watched copper rally here. And I've been suspect about the copper rally. But now, you know, between Hurricane Harvey and now you have Irma, so there's going to be a lot of rebuilding. And the copper prices were already moving higher. So we might see some of that fall off from that. Yeah, the China, you know, one road.
The Silk Road.
Initiative. The Silk Road. Which, you know, yes, it certainly has had some impact, but the way the Chinese securitize some of their debt is with commodities, you know, which I'm a big fan of. I think that there should be gold-backed bonds. How this hasn't taken place is beyond me. And I know my friend Bosco up in Canada, who lives probably not far from where and is up there, and he's been working on this, you know, because he trades, he makes markets for people's gold coins. And, you know, he's been very interested in this. But this is significant. These are significant events that are taking place here. And part of the rally may be that the Chinese are securitizing a lot of commodities, and that puts a floor under the pricing and keeps them in demand. You know, the problem is that when you use commodities for securitization, if you haven't priced them, meaning, well, you know, if you pledge me 100 ounces of gold and you've given me too big a haircut on it, then I'm not really protected if gold prices collapse. But it certainly, you know, if you figure out the right ratios, it does work. And are we embarking upon this? I don't know as of yet, but we are certainly seeing some interesting responses to all this.
And as you mentioned earlier about the central bank policies of Europe and Japan factoring into this thinking, do you still see their monetary policies as staying the same, like the current program of 60 billion euros per month by Europe? Do you see that changing?
Well, you know, I think about that, you know, and, there, you know, Peter and I have actually disagreed because he thought you were going to see an earlier statement from quantitative tightening, but he was dead right on target in saying that it would probably come in October after he shifted a little bit after Jackson Draghi at Jackson Hole. And what Draghi talked about today in his press conference, you know, recalibrating in the October meeting, which fits Peter's timetable now, Peter Buchvar. So, I don't know. I think it's a ruse, but, you know, we'll see. I think it depends on many things. Number one, I think that Mario Draghi is hoping, you know, as Abraham Lincoln would say, he's fervently hoping that Merkel and the CDU do very well in this election because it'll give him more latitude because Merkel has been the protection for Mario Draghi and his whole quantitative easing plan from day one. So the stronger she is, the more comfortable he is. So we'll see the way this election comes out. It'll play upon that. I still say that Mario Draghi, and that's been my premise, and I'm sticking to it. He has a far different agenda than the Fed does or the Bank of Japan because he has a political agenda, and his political agenda is how to craft a Eurozone bond because it'll take a Eurozone bond to create a truly unified European financial system. And therefore, the bigger he builds that ECB balance sheet, the more the chances that he's going to be able to synthetically create a Eurozone bond.
And to continue building that balance sheet, if the ECB is running out of bonds to purchase, could it expand or broaden, if you will, to include German equities?
Well, that's a very good question. And Draghi was actually asked that question today. And of course, in typical Mario Draghi, he danced like he was Fred Astaire. Okay. Really didn't give an answer. Yeah. Could he? He said they hadn't discussed it. Baloney, they haven't discussed it. They're very aware of it because this is going to become a legal issue regardless. And if the AfD, the Alternative for Deutschland Party, actually does better in the election than some people think, it'll for certain become a major legal contention because they're already violating the whole basis of the Maastricht deal to begin with. But everybody, you know, has looked beyond it because Mario Draghi's real mandate is preservation of the euro. And he said that in July of 2012. He keeps talking about inflation, but he has taken upon himself to be the preserver of the entire EU project, regardless of cost. So we can't answer that question. We really can't until we see certain things start to play out. So you're going to have to – everybody's going to develop their own hypothesis. And some hypotheses are going to prove right, and some are going to prove, you know, just, you know, they belong on the trash heap of ideas, or as Max Planck would say, you know, science advances one funeral at a time. So – same with trading.
Yeah, I think, yeah. And I guess the last question could be on the euro. Where do you see that going? We've seen a lot of volatility today, for example, after Mario Draghi's speech and also the ECB releasing forecasts, right, on foreign exchange.
Yes, you know, lovely. In fact, Rick Santelli had Jean-Claude Trichet on, and Santelli asked him a great question at the end. It's on a delay, so it's really hard to get the full sense of it. But, you know, Rick asked him about the euro, and then he said, would he be buying euros? So Jean-Claude Trichet, of course, dodged the question, as Mario Draghi dodged the question. He danced this one with great ability and great panache. He said, you know, it's interesting that he cited the 118 euro level as the number that they use in their projections. So he was kind of being nailed down to that. But, you know, he didn't give it that much credibility. You know, my view on this is that he views he likes the euro here because it helps Merkel, because it quiets the Germans. Because, you know, he wouldn't come out and say this, but if I was there, I would have certainly asked that question. And the question is this, does the strong euro represent the successful policies of the ECB, which of course, you know, Draghi pats his own self, and that's what he would say if asked it in that fashion. I'm not sure where it goes here, but I will tell you this, and I'm going to blog about it tonight, so you ask a very good question. This so far today, the in the cash euro market, the high has been 120.59. This is a real critical area, because if you go back to July 2012, and especially July 23rd, when Draghi delivered his famous comments of whatever it takes, meaning to preserve the euro, the low that week when he made that comment was 120.42 in the euro. That was the low.
Yeah.
Then over the next year and a half, the euro proceeds to rally all the way back to 140.
Wow. Yeah.
Now, okay. Now during that time, though, that was when the United States was in full quantitative easing mode. And then 2014, when the United States begins tapering, the dollar, of course, starts to rally, and the euro drops over the next 2 years from 140 down to 105. So these areas that we're in are very important, and we'll see what happens here.
Wow, great insight. Lots of volatility and moving parts today. How can our listeners learn more about your work, Ira?
You can follow me on my blog at Notes from Underground. And if you go to iraharris.com, click on your Notes from Underground will come up. You click on, you can register for it. It's free. And you'll get a real time into what I'm thinking about.
Great. Excellent. Thank you very much, Ira.
Thanks, Richard. Appreciate it.
The FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only, and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.